Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This article is entitled, Chevron Donates $2.5 Million for Development of Facility, by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Chevron announced that it will donate $2.5 million toward the development of the Midland Athletic Syndicate Athletic Complex. There is a need in our community for a facility like this, said Ryder Booth, VP of Chevron's Mid-Continent Business Unit. Midland's largest demographic is children, and Chevron is proud to support high-quality facilities that support physical and mental health. The athletic complex will also host tournaments, league play, and provide indoor practice space and recreational space for Midland's youth. We are committed to providing a safe and accessible sports complex for the youth of Midland, and Chevron's donation will help us to do just that, said Austin Campbell, Midland Athletic Syndicate president. We are thankful for the support of the Midland business community for investing in this project that will positively impact the Permian Basin for generations to come. This article is entitled, ERCOT Preparing for Winter, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Winter is near, and the Electric Reliability Council of Texas is preparing for increased demand to keep homes and businesses warm. ERCOT has begun issuing a monthly outlook for resource adequacy reports, with the most recent report covering the month of November. In its outlook for November, ERCOT expects installed capacity to increase by 869 megawatts from October 1st to November 1st. Increases by generation type comprise 538 megawatts of solar, 281 megawatts of battery energy storage, and 50 megawatts for other resources. The base November peak day load forecast includes 1,190 megawatts of load for which interconnection agreements have not been signed, but is supported by officer letters from the transmission providers having the responsibility for serving the loads. ERCOT's MORA report takes two approaches to evaluating resource adequacy. Determine the risk that the grid may face emergency conditions for the monthly peak load day, specifically the chances during a range of hours that it may need to issue an energy emergency alert or begin to order controlled outages. And, given a predetermined set of future grid conditions, deterministic scenarios, evaluate the extent that resource capacity can provide sufficient operating reserves for the hour with the highest risk of a reserve shortage. The ERCOT region is forecasted to experience tremendous electric demand growth in the next 5 to 7 years, which is driving the need for ERCOT to adapt and plan differently for the future. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, October 2nd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Fallen but Not Forgotten. Law enforcement, first responders, honor trooper killed in line of duty. Story and photos by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Multiple law enforcement agencies and first responders showed up Tuesday morning to pay their respects to Department of Public Safety Trooper Kevin Alexis Ramirez Vasquez. More than 200 officers and first responders from the Permian Basin stood at attention at the Commemorative Air Force Hangar in Midland, 9600 Wright Drive, to pay respects to the fallen trooper. DPS Regional Director Jose Sanchez spoke about Vasquez's life and service, highlighting the 25-year-old's dedication to law enforcement and the military. Vasquez, a U.S. Army veteran, also served in the National Guard. Vasquez was investigating a crash along State Highway 302 in Ector County on the morning of September 17th, when he was struck by a vehicle while he stood outside his patrol vehicle. He was transported to Medical Center Hospital in Odessa with critical injuries and then airlifted to a hospital in Lubbock. The memorial ceremony for Vasquez was short, as the airplane carrying his body from Lubbock to Houston was only scheduled for a stop in Midland so that law enforcement representatives based in the Permian Basin could pay their respects. Anytime a law enforcement officer is killed nationwide, it affects every law enforcement operator, said DPS Sergeant Stephen Blanco during an interview with the Reporter Telegram. It especially hits home when it occurs here in the Permian Basin. Blanco said Vasquez was dedicated to service. He started in the U.S. military in the Army, and then he was in the National Guard, and also, obviously, the Texas Department of Public Safety, he said. Here in West Texas, it is a big region. The West Texas Permian Basin area is the size of the state of Maine, and there's only a limited number of law enforcement officers to police this large area. Blanco explained that because of the size of West Texas, law enforcement personnel have to rely on each other. When we say a brother to all law enforcement, we truly mean that, Blanco said. As you can see today, we had all the agencies in the Permian Basin here, the Odessa Police Department, the Midland Police Department, and they handled the honor guard duties. Blanco said the honor guards came from Odessa and Midland because the Texas DPS honor guard went to Houston to prepare for Vasquez's funeral services. Having that relationship with our local agency, with both the Midland and Odessa Police Department and the Midland County Sheriff's Office, who brought their patrol. Those are just three examples of that relationship that we can call on each other in a time of need, Blanco said. There are no words to describe that sense of unity, of brotherhood, that we have here in the Permian Basin. Additionally, Blanco added that DPS has had a tremendous outpouring of support from community members. Our Help a Hero fundraiser, which was set up by the DPS Officers Association, has raised close to $40,000, Blanco shared. We have had an outpouring of support from local oilfield companies. As for the lessons learned from Vasquez's tragic death, Blanco reinforced the concept of how fragile life is. All life is fragile, Blanco said. When we put on this uniform, we are humans behind this badge, and we can lose our lives just like anybody else. The West Texas chaplain of the memorial service was Brandon Pugh. Representatives from the Odessa Police Department, Midland Police Department, Midland County Sheriff's Office, Ector County Sheriff's Office, Midland ISD, Ector ISD, University of Texas Permian Basin, Lubbock Police, Midland Fire Department, Odessa Rescue, West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department, Midland International Air and Spaceport, and the U.S. Border Patrol participated in the service. Vasquez is the 241st DPS officer to die in the line of duty since 1823. He is survived by his parents and three siblings. This article is entitled Midland Athletic Syndicate to Break Ground on New Sports Complex by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. The Midland Athletic Syndicate is breaking ground on the Diamondback Energy Athletic Complex on the northeast side of the Scarborough Sports Complex on Wednesday. The Midland Athletic Syndicate is a nonprofit organization that aims to enhance youth sports and the local community by offering education, establishing top-notch facilities, and providing cutting-edge equipment. We are a small group that started over a year and a half ago in February, said Austin Campbell, president of the Midland Athletic Syndicate. It really started after a bunch of us went to Abilene and visited the Dodge Jones Foundation and saw their facility, the Abilene Youth Sports Authority, AYSA. Inspired by the multi-purpose basketball and volleyball state-of-the-art facility, the Midland Athletic Syndicate decided that they wanted to bring the facility here. We very quickly established our nonprofit and hit the ground running, Campbell said. Our goal was to raise $35 million, which seemed like an overwhelming task. But once we started talking to people in the community, large family offices and corporate partners, it became a reality. The Diamondback Energy Athletic Complex will have more than 100,000 square feet of playing surface that features 6 full-size basketball courts that convert into 12 full-size volleyball courts and 2 soccer fields. The facility would also feature male and female locker rooms, concessions, spectator seating, and flex rooms for meetings and education. We've got an indoor soccer arena that Midland has been in need of for a long time, Campbell said. Most kids in Midland that want to play indoor soccer must travel to West Odessa. Now they're going to be able to stay here in Midland. John Scarborough, the vice president of the Midland Athletic Syndicate, said that the sports complex will not be membership-based. We're not membership-based, so it's an open-door policy for the Midland community kids, Scarborough said. We hope to host camps and have a variety of opportunities available for all sets of kids in all ranges and sports. We have volleyball, basketball, and soccer, but there's opportunities for dance, gymnastics, and so many other things. Scarborough added that the facility will draw people from all over the region to Midland for their events, such as volleyball tournaments. We are centrally located here in the Permian, and we want to draw from New Mexico, El Paso, Abilene, San Angelo. We want to draw all those people to Midland, Campbell said. It's going to be a big boom for Midland. Campbell added that although the courts will be available to rent for tournaments, they still aim to have court space available for children that aren't a part of any sports. We're always going to have a place for kids to play, Campbell said. Scarborough added that the facility will help to fill a need in gym space for children around Midland. The Boys and Girls Clubs and other nonprofits in Midland are busting at the seams and turning kids away, Scarborough said. We're going to have a space to help those other organizations fill a need in gym space. Trovoyce Jackson, the executive director of the Midland Athletic Syndicate, said that the facility will also help to improve the quality of youth sports in Midland. Because of this space, the quality of instruction will go up, Jackson said. It will actually benefit the Boys and Girls Club and YMCA because it shrinks the numbers and allows for more personalized instruction. Scarborough said that the goal of the Midland Athletic Syndicate was to improve the quality of kids' lives by providing them with a safe space to do recreational activities. He added that they signed a lease agreement with the city for 99 years and that the investment will pay off because it's going toward the youth of the community. The goal was to provide a safe space where kids would feel comfortable and get them out of the elements, Scarborough said. It's a controlled environment with good instruction that the parents know they'll be safe at. The goal was to provide that for kids who don't have that place to go. This article is entitled, MISD, Firm in Its Belief, It Has Legal Right to Build School at Ranchland, by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. On Monday, a trio of Midland residents filed a petition with the 441st District Court concerning the future of Ranchland Hills. Late Tuesday afternoon, after the Reporter-Telegram published its story, Midland ISD issued a statement about the petition. MISD Statement. Midland ISD is aware of the petition circulating throughout the community related to the district-owned property at 1600 East Wadley Avenue. However, the district has not been formally served. The district stands firm in its belief that it not only is within its legal right, but also has a responsibility to parents and taxpayers to proceed with the voter-approved construction of the Bond 2023 projects, as communicated to the public when the property was purchased in 2019 and throughout the bond. The capital improvement projects will provide Midland students safety and security upgrades, address enrollment growth, and allow for the all-important grade reconfiguration that will move 6th graders to middle schools and provide a traditional 9th to 12th grade model. Midland ISD has made a commitment to the community to stay on time and on budget with the bond projects, and looks forward to continuing to honor the 2023 bond timeframes, budgets, and projects that have been committed to voters. Assuming the current general construction inflation rate estimate for the Midland-Odessa area is 7%, a delay in these projects would equate to a projected $2.4 million increase in construction costs every month to deliver on the same projects that were promised to the Midland community following the approval of the bond in November of 2023. The district is proud to have already saved taxpayers approximately $310 million in interest through the recent bond sale as compared to the planning estimates, as a result of investor demand and a sound financial rating. Additionally, since 2012, the district has saved taxpayers $92 million through refinancing and defeasing existing debt. We look forward to the upcoming groundbreakings for the new campuses that will take place in the summer of 2025 and welcoming students and staff in 2028. This article is entitled Ranchland Hills, Petition Filed Against MISD and City. Previous legal cases show school district authority overrides zoning powers of municipality. By Trevor Hawes, Editorial Director. A petition has been filed to prevent Ranchland Hills Golf Club from becoming the future site of Midland High School. Late Monday afternoon, plaintiffs Linda Jackson, Jonathan Rojo, and Christy Aldridge, all of whom live adjacent to Ranchland Hills, filed a petition with the 441st District Court. They are seeking a writ of mandamus and a declaratory judgment. A writ of mandamus is an order from a court to an inferior government official ordering the government official to properly fulfill their official duties or correct an abuse of discretion, according to a Cornell Law School definition. The defendants listed are Midland ISD, the City of Midland, Assistant City Manager Chris Saladin, and City Building Officer Jeff Pinkstaff. The plaintiffs are challenging the lack of a municipal zoning change to the property. They cite the city's Ordinance 6855, which sets the zoning as a planned district for a recreation center. According to a copy obtained by the Reporter-Telegram, the ordinance states, "The only use of the property shall be as a private membership recreational club, including a clubhouse for country club activities, each as dining, dancing, receptions, and meetings, and facilities for recreational activities such as golf, tennis, swimming, and related sales of recreational clothing and equipment, all for the use of members and guests. There shall be no other use permitted of the property." The petition argues that a zoning change is required for MISD to move forward. In 1982, the Texas Court of Appeals determined in City of Addison v. Dallas Independent School District that, quote, the zoning authority of a municipality is subservient to the reasonable exercise of school district authority. The Supreme Court has determined that the school district's authority to locate school facilities overrides the police power of municipalities to zone them out, in order that the legislative purpose in delegating this authority to the school district might not be frustrated, unquote. In 2021, the city of Burnet released an interpretation decision on the question of whether Burnet ISD had to abide by municipal zoning code on height restrictions and landscaping requirements when renovating athletic facilities. No, Texas courts have held the zoning authority of a municipality is subservient to the reasonable exercise of public school district authority unless the municipality can show the public school district is acting unreasonable or arbitrary, the decision said. However, as discussed infra, the city's building codes and subdivision regulations do apply to public school district projects. The petition filed Monday alleges that the city and its Planning and Zoning Commission violated the Texas Open Meeting Act, citing a lack of any zoning application or approval for use of the property as an educational facility for MISD over the past 2 years. The plaintiffs argue that the absence of such a record and notices evidences the city's violation of the Texas Open Meeting Act. The petition also alleges noncompliance with the Midland Stormwater Management Code, which requires the issuance of permits for the discharge of stormwater from construction activities in compliance with the Texas Water Act. The plaintiffs allege Saladin failed to enforce this code and that Pink staff failed to comply with city code regarding site plans, rezoning applications, building applications, and building permits. The petition claims MISD plans to start construction and grading of the grounds of the property on Tuesday, October 1, 2024. According to the district's 2023 school bond website, groundbreaking is anticipated in summer 2025. MISD purchased the Ranchland Hills property in early 2019. The land was slated to become the future location of a new Midland High in the 2019 school bond, which failed, and again in the 2023 school bond, which passed. The course has remained in operation since the sale, being run by Ranchland Golf Partners. Late Tuesday, MISD released a statement about the petition. The district said it stands firm in its belief that it is within its legal right to proceed with building on the site. This is the Life Tributes column. Arthur Richard Langrich, February 7, 1933 to September 26, 2024. Arthur Art Richard Langrich of Midland died on September 26th. Son of Ruth and Carl Langrich, Art was born in Arcadia, Oklahoma on February 7th, 1933. Art's first engineering job was with Union Carbide in Brownsville. There he met and married his beloved wife, Sue Starnes, a fellow Oklahoman, and they were married 47 years until her death in 2010. Art struck it rich again in 2012 when he married his second wife, Frances Garrett. Art is survived by his wife, Frances Langrich, his children, Larry Langrich, Jennifer Aurelius, Mark, and Jay Langrich, Jaron, as well as grandchildren, Evan Langrich, Reagan, Kate Langrich, Abby Aurelius, and Olivia Aurelius, and one great-grandson, Jeremiah Salazar. He is also survived by his stepchildren, Terry Garrett, Scott Garrett, Hetty, Gary Garrett, and Donna Wishard, Jeff, his sister, Betty Sexton, as well as nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his wife, Martha Sue Langrich, sister Marie Langrich, and brother Fred Wilkinson. A memorial service and celebration will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 19th at the Manor Park Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Hospice of Midland, the Lions Club, or Fairmont Park Church of Christ. Jack Jr. King, August 24, 1935 to September 29, 2024. Jack Jr. King was called home on September 29th. He was born on August 24, 1935 in Seminole, Oklahoma, to Martin and Jewel King. Jack is survived by his son, J.J. King, and wife, Stacy, and daughter, Paula Bettis, and husband, John, all of Midland. He is also survived by 4 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren. Jack was preceded in death by his wife, Gala, his parents, 2 sisters, and numerous cousins. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Midland Christian School. A graveside service will be held October 2nd at 10 a.m. at Little Cemetery in Little, Oklahoma. A memorial, celebration of life service, and family visitation will be on Friday, October 4th at 10:30 a.m. at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Eugene M. Hodge, August 2, 1934 to September 17, 2024. Eugene M. Gene Hodge, 90 of Midland, passed away on September 17th. Funeral service will be held at First Presbyterian Church of Midland on Friday, October 4th at 10:30 a.m. Gene was born on August 2, 1934 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. His parents, Wilson and Sylvia Hodge, raised a kind, strong-willed, optimistic, humble man. After graduating from high school, he married his best friend, Peggy J. Graves, on November 16, 1952, in Jal, New Mexico. Gene was preceded in death by his devoted wife, Peg Hodge, and his parents, Wilson and Sylvia Hodge. He is survived by his son, Bob Hodge, and his wife, Chris of Midland, and his daughter, Cynthia Daniel of Houston. He is also survived by his loving 6 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Hospice of Midland or the First Presbyterian Church of Midland. Cremation arrangements were under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ronald Van Meter. Ronald Van Meter, 82 of Midland, passed away September 28th. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday, October 7th at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Howard Hugh Crockett. Howard Hugh Crockett, 73 of Odessa, passed from this life on September 29th in Odessa. A viewing will be held on Wednesday, October 2nd from 6 to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on October 3rd at 2 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home, followed by burial in American Heritage Cemetery.
Area gets ready to host Special Olympics. More than 1,000 athletes and several thousand of their fans will be in Odessa this week for the Special Olympics Fall Classic. Held in Odessa and Midland, it will feature swimming, golf, bocce, and softball. There will also be fundamental sports, which were created for those who can't compete in typical Special Olympics events. The athletes have a chance to receive a medal and be involved in various modifications of a lot of activities, Executive Director of Marketing and Communications for Special Olympics Texas, Dave Norris, said. He added that fundamental sports has grown about 100% each year. Special Olympics is aimed at intellectually disabled athletes, and fundamental sports opens doors for a lot of them. There will be several cauldrons representing the different regions, but there isn't a scheduled torch run leading up to the cauldron lighting. We have many dozens of law enforcement officers who are coming in to help with the show, and they will be teaming up with athletes to light the cauldrons. That's this Friday night at the opening ceremonies, which start at 7 p.m. at the Ector County Coliseum, Norris said. Athletic events will typically be 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. with a break for lunch. Some of our events start at 10 a.m. It's pretty much sports specific, but you can pretty much count on Friday and Saturday having sports going all day, Norris added. There are volunteer openings starting as early as Wednesday, October the 2nd. They are also needed for specific events such as bocce and swimming. We've seen great community support coming out from Midland and Odessa. A lot of sign-ups, but we still definitely have plenty of sign-ups left, and we're trying to fill those, Norris said. This is the first time Odessa and Midland have hosted the state games. We had area sports there, which are much smaller scale than this. This is the first time we're bringing a statewide games. It's really bringing in everybody from Texas. But beyond that, Norris said, we even have Special Olympics Hawaii flying in for this. Laura Martz, director of Discovery Odessa, said it's an honor to host the Special Olympics Fall Classic this year, welcoming over 1,000 athletes and their families to Odessa, Midland, for nearly a week is both a privilege and a thrill. These athletes will immerse themselves in our culture and economy, participating in events at our facilities, dining in our restaurants, staying in our hotels, and exploring our attractions. This influx of visitors is expected to generate over $2 million in economic impact for our city. It's exactly the type of event we aspire to host, as it supports tourism and showcases our West Texas hospitality to new guests, Martz said. Discover Odessa and the SOTX team invite you to the Ector County Coliseum on Friday, October the 4th at 7 p.m. for the opening ceremonies. This free event promises to be full of energy. The parade of athletes and the dance party that follows will rival any event you've attended. We encourage everyone in the Permian Basin to join us for this unforgettable celebration. Quick hits. Election 2024. October the 7th is the last day to register to vote in the upcoming presidential election. A number of local races are also on the ballot. Eddie Mitchell will challenge current District 1 City Council person Mark Matta in November's election. Wheels on Meals Executive Director Craig Stoker is challenging incumbent Denise Swanner for the Odessa City Council at-large seat. Odessa Attorney Cal Hendrick is challenging Mayor Javier Hoven. District 2 will feature incumbent Steve Thompson against Nayeli Urias. The races are nonpartisan and are for 4-year terms. October 7th is the last day to register to vote, and early voting begins October the 21st and ends November the 1st. November the 5th is Election Day. Election events. Mayoral candidate Cal Hendrick and Council at Large candidate Greg Stoker will have a joint coffee with the candidates event 8:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. October the 19th at Doughboys Cafe. A District 1 candidate forum is scheduled 6 to 8 p.m. October the 17th at Woodson Community Building, 1010 East Murphy Street. The Ector County Republican Women Primary Election Forum is scheduled 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. October 16th at the Odessa Country Club Ballroom. The Odessa mayoral debate is scheduled 7 to 8 p.m. October 15th at Basin PBS. The event will be broadcast live from the Basin PBS Facebook page. Public may attend, arrive by 6:30 p.m. Turning 65, How Does Medicare's Fall Enrollment Affect Me? By Tony King. A friend introduced me to your Medicare column because I'm stressed about what I need to do to enroll in Medicare. I have started working part-time and am no longer eligible for company benefits. I'm turning 65 on November the 11th and need my Medicare to begin that month. I will not be receiving a Social Security check until I am at least 67. How does Medicare's fall enrollment time affect me, since I will be applying for Medicare during that period? Please explain what I should do to enroll in Medicare properly and not make any mistakes regarding Medicare's rules. Dear Tony responds, Don't stress yourself about Medicare annual enrollment period, which begins October the 15th, because you will be in your Medicare initial enrollment period, which is Medicare's special time for those turning 65. During your IEP, you can pick which Medicare plan, whether original Medicare with a Medicare supplement and a standalone Medicare Part D plan, or Medicare Advantage plan with Part D, best fits your medical and financial situation. During next year's AEP in 2025, you can make a change to either the Medicare Advantage plan or Medicare Part D if you select one when you enroll in Medicare this year when you turn 65. This year's AEP is not for you. Medicare's IEP is a 7-month window that begins 3 months before the month you turn 65. The month you turn 65 and 3 months after turning 65. If you are covered on Medicare Parts A and B by the end of your initial enrollment period, IEP, you can sleep free from worry about Medicare penalties. If you wait past the final 3-month period to enroll, Part B and D penalties can begin. Chapter 1 of Tony's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition explains enrolling in Medicare in detail. Below is the Medicare Initial Enrollment Period, IEP, 7-month timeline. If enrolling any time 3 months before turning 65, your Medicare begins the first day of the month you turn 65. If enrolling the month you turn 65, then Medicare will begin the first of next month. If enrolling 1 month after you turn 65, your Medicare will begin first of the next month. If enrolling 2 months after you turn 65, your Medicare will begin the next month. If enrolling 3 months after you turn 65, your Medicare will begin the next month. Dear reader, since you are not receiving your Social Security check, you need to create a My Social Security account through Social Security's website at www.ssa.gov/Medicare/signup. Social Security enrolls America in Medicare. Please enroll in either September or October for your Medicare Parts A and B to have an effective date of November the 1st. Once you have enrolled in Medicare on the www.ssa.gov website, you can view your benefit verification letter and access your Medicare Part A and B dates with your new Medicare number and enroll in whatever Medicare health and prescription drug plan you wish. Whether you pick a Medicare supplement with a standalone Part D prescription drug plan or a Medicare Advantage HMO/PPO plan with prescription drugs, find a plan that best fits your medical or financial needs. Tony's Confused About Medicare AEP Zoom workshop is live Wednesday, October the 23rd at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. To register by Zoom, visit Tony Says, that's TONISAYS.com, or call 832-519-8664 for more information. If you have a Medicare question, email info@TonySays.com. Tony's Medicare books are available at TonySays.com. Obituaries. Larry Lynn Davis, age 59, passed away on September the 29th. Visitation will be held at Sunset Memorial Gardens on Tuesday, October the 1st from 5 to 8 p.m., and a memorial service will be held on Wednesday, October the 2nd at 10 a.m. in the chapel at Sunset. Mike Carlos Vanderberg, age 55, passed away on September the 23rd in New Mexico. His last ride and celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, October the 12th. The last ride will start at Big Daddy Zane's. Kick stands up at 3:30 p.m. Ride to Corky's for his celebration of life. Emily Anzors, age 18, of Odessa, died Sunday, September the 29th. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, October the 4th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Howard Hugh Crockett, age 73, of Odessa, died Sunday, September the 29th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. October the 3rd at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Manuel Fierro Sr., age 80, of Odessa, died Friday, September the 27th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. October the 3rd at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery. Virginia Gonzalez Fuentes, age 67, of Odessa, died Monday, September the 30th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements will be by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Yared Madrid, age 48, died Monday, September the 30th in Lubbock. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Kirith Stubblefield, age 72, died Thursday, September the 26th in Pecos. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. This day in history. Today is Wednesday, October the 2nd. And on this day, October 2nd, in 1967, Thurgood Marshall joined the U.S. Supreme Court at its first African-American justice. He would serve on the bench for 24 years until his retirement in 1991. Also on this date in 1780, British Army officer John André was executed by the Americans as a spy after conducting secret meetings with American General Benedict Arnold during the American Revolution. In 1919, President Woodrow Wilson had a serious stroke at the White House that left him paralyzed on his left side. In 1944, German troops crushed the two-month-old Warsaw Uprising, during which a quarter of a million people were killed. In 1959, Rod Serling's The Twilight Zone made its debut on CBS TV with the episode Where Is Everybody?, starring Earl Holliman. In 1970, one of the two chartered twin-engine planes flying the Wichita State University football team to Utah crashed into a mountain near Silver Plume, Colorado, killing 31 of the 40 people on board. In 1985, American actor Rock Hudson died, becoming one of the first Hollywood celebrities known to succumb to AIDS-related complications. The extensive publicity surrounding his death drew attention to the disease. In 2006, an armed milk truck driver took a group of girls hostage in an Amish schoolhouse in Nichols Mine, Pennsylvania, killing five of them and wounding five others before taking his own life. In 2016, Hall of Fame baseball broadcaster Vin Scully signed off for the last time, ending 67 years behind the mic for the Dodgers, as he called a 7-1 loss to the Giants in San Francisco. In 2020, stricken by COVID-19, President Donald Trump was injected with an experimental drug combination at the White House before being flown to a military hospital, where he was given remdesivir, an antiviral drug. Dear Abby, I am dating an older man with two ex-wives. I have met both of them. I don't mind them. The last ex-wife and I get along. She usually calls me because he won't answer his phone for her. The first ex-wife, I don't like at all. I used to talk to her because she's lied to me about him. This woman has her kids call and tell him to call her, which he sneaks around to do, among other things. She talks smack about two of her kids with him, supposedly his, and she cheated on him numerous times. Anytime we see her, which is usually at one of the kids' houses, she or he runs to give the other a hug. I think this is very wrong, and I've twice said something to him. Am I wrong? Am I jealous? He says they don't want to be with each other. They're just friends. But I don't trust her. I feel like she's trying to start trouble. Not to mention, one of the kids remarked, if my mom wanted him back, she could get him. I respect your opinion. Please help me. Am I right or wrong? Dear Abby responds, many divorced couples try to keep things amicable for the sake of their children. Your twice married boyfriend may be one of them. If you trust what he says, his first ex-wife isn't likely to wreck your relationship unless your insecurity allows it. If you cannot trust this man's word, you should no longer be together. What the kid said hasn't helped the situation. Please do not let it cause trouble in your relationship with their father. And another dear Abby, I filed for divorce 9 months ago. The judge signed my papers 6 weeks ago. I was with my alcoholic ex for 17 years, married for 12. I knew my marriage was over a year ago, so I was preparing myself. 4 months ago, I met Aaron, a man I have grown to really like. He feels the same, but my sisters feel I shouldn't be thinking about a relationship. My kids are grown and out of the house. They have met Aaron and say, whatever makes you happy. But I'm afraid if my sisters find out I'm seeing someone, they are going to be negative. I really want them to know how happy I am, but I'm not sure if I should say anything just yet. Please help. Dear Abby responds, you have only recently emerged from a long and difficult marriage, which has to have been stressful and depressing. Right now you are on an emotional high. Your sisters are giving you good advice. Slow down. If what you and Aaron have together is as good as you think, keep seeing him and get to know each other better. Stop hiding him from your sisters and introduce him. But when you do, tell them you are not jumping from frying pan into the fire and plan to spend time getting to know him before making any permanent decisions. You have earned that right. And dear Abby says, to those who celebrate Rosh Hashanah, at sundown tonight, the Jewish New Year begins. During this time of solemn introspection, I wish my Jewish readers, may you be inscribed in the Book of Life and have a good year. You can write to Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069. For everything you need to know about wedding planning, order How to Have a Lovely Wedding, Send your name and mailing address, plus check or money order for $8, U.S. funds, to Dear Abby, Wedding Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.